Vandana Shiva, it's a great pleasure to have you here in the studios of Radio Dreieckland in Freiburg.
My pleasure to be here.
Tonight you'll talk in the Paulus Saal about whose world is it, financial and ecological crisis, and you have the slogan, we are the solution. Maybe we start with this we. Who's this we? Is the we, the European Union, the WTO, our politicians?
Well, I think the Occupy movement has simplified the discussion on the we very, very well by saying the 99%. So the majority of the people in the North and the South, the young and the old, the black and the white, all of us together.
So everybody but the 1% I was just naming.
Yes.
So, but the main problem is that if we look at the current crisis in the world, it's just this very particular, to stay in your language, 1% that is actually trying to manage it. So how can we be the solution?
I think the fact that the crisis has been created by the 1% was already based on destruction of basic democratic norms of running any society, shaping an economy, making decisions that have impact on everyday lives and the planet's health. Trying to solve the crisis by excluding people even more is the reason you have an M15 in Spain and you have the Occupy movement all over. And in India, day before I was on the streets with the people fighting mega chains in retail under the foreign direct investment in retail. Every few days there's farmers protesting on land grab. So democracy is at the heart of it. And very, very clearly one can see a very dictatorial way in which the 1% would like to use the crisis to continue to accumulate not just financial wealth, but now even the remaining parts of the earth and nature that are free, that are the commons that support life on earth. And that's going to be the contest at Rio+20.
Another famous theoretician of globalization, Naomi Klein, she wrote the book about the shock doctrine, in which she well describes how crises like the one we're witnessing right now have often actually been used not to improve participation, not to improve the power of many people, but actually used by the powerful to make reforms there. Made actually everything worse.
Yes, Naomi, of course, developed her book out of the fact that the Americans had said we are using shock and awe in Iraq, and the war against Iraq was used to appropriate the oil and to appropriate the seed. They actually had an Order 81 under Bremer, which made it impossible for farmers in the heart of where wheat and barley have evolved to use their native varieties, and were forced to buy Monsanto seeds. And that's happening everywhere. The crisis is being used to consolidate parts, so to the extent that the 1%, in my view, would shrink to the 0.1%. But it is such an unstable model. It is already unstable. It would become totally unstable. And there's no way it can last. And that's why I've always maintained hope and optimism from the very fact that they're creating an inverted pyramid, and inverted pyramids topple. You need a solid base for a pyramid to be strong. And that's why nature's economy must be robust, people's economy, people's cultures must be very, very vibrant and resilient. And then you can have a little bit of reasonable profit making. But this unreasonable grab, this unreasonable greed is pushing life on earth to the precipice. And everyone can see it, which is why ordinary people, young bankers, the other day I had a call from the M15 movement, young fellow who was doing very well in a bank, hasn't lost his job, but he realizes all his friends have lost their jobs. And he can see this will not work. It's not working for the species on the planet. It's definitely not working for the third world and the poor. It's working for 5 oligarchs in India. And globalization and how it works, I think India is such a good example. India is supposedly shining. We have one of the highest growth rates in the world. But what's that growth measuring? How much Reliance and Ambani's grab the oil, which was a public wealth, grab the electricity of our cities, how they grab minerals and are exporting coal and iron ore to China at very, very cheap prices. But India, in this period of so-called economic shining, has become a capital of a tragedy we could not have imagined, farmer suicides. 250,000 farmers have taken their lives because of the debt they were pushed into with monopolies on seed, particularly cotton. Most suicides are in the cotton belt, and most of the cotton is now owned and controlled by Monsanto. And the other side of this picture is that half of Indian children are so severely malnourished that they're stunted and wasted. Now, you're closing the future of the country. A country of 1.2 billion does not rest on an Ambani family or a Tata empire. It rests on those millions of healthy children whom we are saying you can't have a right to your health, your nutrition, and your food. Because when you shape an economy on the basis of greed and grab and power and abuse and violence, then these fundamentals must disappear. Are the children getting enough food? Is the country's freedom and sovereignty around seed being defended? Are our rivers flowing clean? And you can't afford to get rid of these fundamentals.
Is it a problem made or produced by Indian politicians, or do you actually blame Western governments for this very development you've just mentioned?
You know, I got involved in seed saving, and I started Navdanya, the movement, exactly 25 years ago when I happened to be invited to a meeting where the corporations were laying out their plans to have a free trade treaty at that time called the GATT, which became the WTO, and in it having clauses for owning life, Article 27.3b of the Trade-Related Intellectual Property Rights Agreement. And that's when I sat back in shock and said, biodiversity and species aren't inventions of man. They are part of our web of life. They are part of our family. And I'm not going to allow it. This was imposed by corporations. Monsanto is on record saying we wrote this treaty. We defined the problem. And for them, the problem was farmers save seed. For me, that's not a problem. That's our duty. And so we started Navdanya. So it is Western powers pushed by global corporations. But in these 20 years, of course, there are enough Indian politicians who are part of the global corporate class. And we are right now having the so-called India-Europe Free Trade Treaty. I was actually at a dinner with the European president in Delhi 2 days ago, where they want to, for example, dump dairy products. Now, it's not that the farmer of Europe would gain if dairy products are dumped on India. What would happen is the biggest dairy economy of the world, which is in the hands of women with one cow and two goats, that would be totally dismantled. And both the farmers of Europe and the farmers of India would lose. Europe is the heart of the big drug companies like Novartis. Novartis is trying to challenge us to say, you can't define invention to be invention. Let it be evergreening so that our old drugs we can recycle with patents. India is the pharmacy of the world because we make low-cost generic drugs. We distribute them to the world. And this so-called trade treaty would destroy those options. So it is the corporations driving northern governments, also driving southern governments, and we now have alliance of the elite who don't care about the planet and people, and that's why we need an alliance of people.
When we talk about this alliance, and you've talked about Seeds and GATT, which was the pre-organization before the WTO took office, and right now in Europe there have been quite some big protests this weekend about this new ACTA agreement, of which India is actually not a part, but which is likely or supposed to be part of the WTO TRIPS agreement later on. Have you been following these protests?
Yes, and also because my sister, who is a doctor, medical doctor, but gave her life to public health, like me as a physicist gave my life to sustainability, she's been very involved in the whole ACTA campaigns because first you define that everything belongs to five corporations through patent regimes. And then if there are other intellectual property regimes that say you can have process patents on medicine, don't have to have product patents, you will not own seed because seed is not an invention, then these same corporations, and it's the same companies which control pharmaceuticals and medicine, and they control the seed. It's the same five big giant players. And they came out of the war industry making poisons. And from there, they have spread their wings into everything. Now, they turn around and say, if a farmer is saving seed, that's piracy. If a country is making generic drugs, that's counterfeit. And this is an abuse of fundamental human rights that are enshrined both in the global United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and in our national constitutions. This is becoming dictatorship, and it's becoming fascism.
very strong words, but still, before you said you're quite still always have been an optimist. Now let's maybe go a bit to the local level here. Today you're in Freiburg. Freiburg's PR and local politicians have the slogan Freiburg Green City, and there's been lots of debate whether or not a form of green capitalism will actually be the solution to all the problems that are out there. What are your considerations on that?
Well, they, you know, the very fact that at Rio Plus 20, which is 20 years after the first Earth Summit at Rio, the main title has been given the green economy. And in the clauses of the so-called zero draft, the UN has its own crazy language of talking, they say for the green economy, business will lead. In my view, if you have to have a real green economy, you should be asking the Indian peasant women who've saved the seeds and started the first modern ecology movement through hugging trees called CHIPCO. You need to ask the youth, how would you like to design your city so that there's employment for everybody, that so that there's economic democracy and living economies? You're already defining the green economy as an economy that will be shaped by the very people who have created the crisis. And if you look deeper into what are they calling the green economy, the green economy is grabbing all the land of Africa to be able to go grow jatropha and biofuels in order to continue to sell automobiles at a time when oil runs out. The green economy is stopping the production of healthy, wholesome food, destroying small family farms in India, in Germany, in Europe, and replacing it with all kinds of manipulated food that is not worthy of being called food. Synthetic biology. They actually have had debates with founders of synthetic biology like Craig Venter, who turn around and say, but why should food continue to be food? We should be able to eat stuff that bacteria shit out. And I don't think we need to live on the shit of bacteria. We have a better status as a species, and we should be protecting our small farms. It is possible to grow more food using less resources. We do that in India, in Navdanya. We can double food production by going ecological. The United Nations has admitted that. The International Assessment on Science and Technology for Development has admitted that. That should be the real green economy, not grabbing the remaining resources of the world by manipulating accounting tools. And I think what the Earth is calling us to do is to love her, to recognize she is the provider of all our needs, that she is living, she is Gaia. And all that the green economy in the hands of corporations would like us to recognize is, oh, leave it to the very accountants who brought down Wall Street. They've created enough trouble. It's time for them to retire and let the future be in the hands of people who care about each other and the Earth.
Some nice closing words of Vandana Shiva. She's today speaking in Freiburg tonight at the Paulussaal. Well, Vandana Shiva, thank you very much for coming by here at Radio Dreieckland. And, well, I hope you have a good time here.
Thank you.